What is your motivation deep down inside for wanting to be involved in counseling with other people? Some people want to be in this kind of profession because it does give them power over others. Some people want to be in this kind of profession because they think they know it all and they want to make sure everybody else behaves the way they think they ought to. And I've seen preachers make that mistake, and I've seen counselors make that mistake. I've even seen people working with children make that mistake. What is your motivation? What brings you here to this class? What drives you to spend the time that you're spending coming here and getting this education with a view to somehow being involved in a counseling ministry? I think that's a very important question for you to answer. I can't answer it for you. It's an important question for you to answer because God made it an important question. Secondly, you need to check your ability. He says, an overseer then must be above reproach. The husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. He said, well, wait a minute. I came here to learn how to counsel. And when you're counseling, you know what you're doing? You're teaching. To greater and lesser degrees almost all the time. Even in the data gathering process many times, you're teaching. And the more you become involved with that person who is your counselee, and the more that person comes to trust you, the more you become a teacher to that person. Particularly in a biblical frame of reference, in a church setting, in a nonprofit religious counseling situation, or in teaching a Bible study that you have 30 or 40 women coming to, and then you're meeting with those women from time to time. You need to have an ability to teach, able to teach. Now listen. Teaching doesn't necessarily mean that you can get up here and give a nice didactic lecture like I'm giving. Doesn't necessarily mean that. Some people can't get up here and teach worth a hoot, but they're great at working with somebody one-on-one and teaching that person how to modify their behavior and get their life on track. One of my proteges that I trained years ago, I shudder when he gets up in front of a group to lecture. I just want to leave the room. I feel sorry for him. He comes off terrible. But I want to tell you what, he is a better counselor than I ever thought about being. He does a magnificent job in the counseling office. I'm somewhat amazed that he pulls off what he does. God has given him a very unique gift. So you're the one who has to evaluate, has God given you an ability to teach others? But I don't want you to necessarily think it means you have to be able to get up and teach a nice didactic lecture type of class. It may not mean that at all. Thirdly, check your life. Check your life. 14 of these principles here, these standards that Paul gives us, 14 of them can all be grouped under the heading self-discipline. Self-discipline is one of them. But if you look at them carefully, 14 of them can be listed under the heading of self-discipline. Discipline. Is your life self-discipline? I know a church that was looking for a pastor, and that church had a number of families in it between the ages of about 30 and 40, and lots of children in those families in that age range. And I was talking to the chairman of the pulpit committee at that particular church, and he told me, he said, send us men who have reared their family successfully. We want somebody to tell us how to do it that's done it. We want somebody to show us how to do it who has done it. We want somebody who can see how where we're going wrong and help us go right. I want to tell you, your life has a lot to do with the success of your counseling. It's always been a puzzlement to me how many people in marriage and family counseling have been divorced 2, 3, and 4 times. I have to ask, where's your credibility, folks? Now, I'm not saying a person can't be divorced and get his life straightened out and maybe even learn from some of the bad mistakes that were made along the way and grow and develop and mature in Christ and be an excellent marriage and family counselor. But 2, 3, and 4 times? I begin to wonder about that credibility. Check your life. Check your performance. And the verses I have listed there with check your performance all have to do with the word modeling. Now, Paul doesn't use the word model, but that's what he's talking about in our lingo of the day. He says, follow me as I follow Christ. Follow my example. He's talking about modeling. I model for you how it is that you ought to handle suffering. Christ, look at him. He models for you how it is you ought to handle suffering. 2 Peter chapter 2, 18 and following. And so Paul is saying to us, if you're going to be in this leadership role, and in my mind, in counseling is almost more important than it is as an elder, because you're working with people one-on-one, and they're seeing you under a microscope. Sometimes when you're as an elder or a deacon, you can kind of hide a lot of your flaws. But when you're counseling people one-on-one, you can't hide your flaws. They are going to see them. What kind of a model are you? Are you prepared to be a model to those people that you want to work with? That's what Paul's talking about. And then last of all, check your credibility. Paul says we need to be what? We need to be credible inside the church and where else? Outside the church. I wrote the fall letter to my congregation, put in the bulletin yesterday. And in that letter, the first three paragraphs, I enumerated for them about five or six different illustrations of the fact that our church has a good reputation in our city. And I did so by citing incidences that either I had observed or people in the community told me about people in our church as I have become acquainted and begun to move through that community. It's a joy to be in a church where people respect it. Our people have the respect of our community. And I thank God, because that's the first step of winning them to Christ. That's the first step of helping them with their marriage. That's what he's dealing with here. Check your credibility. Is your life credible? They say, I'm going over here and seeing so-and-so to get help with raising my children. Is your life pretty credible to them? That's a good question to ask. Those are the kind of things that qualify your person as a biblical counselor. Now, let me put a footnote on all that. I am not saying, and Paul was not saying, that you have to be perfect. Because if he was, none of us qualify. It's an interesting how good common sense is when we apply it to a lot of spiritual things. What's the common sense? When you look at what he says, what's the common sense? The common sense is, to use the vernacular today, is you basically have your life together. That's the common sense. Spiritually speaking, and the way you live out your life, you basically have your life. That's what we're getting at here. Qualify your person. Take a good look and say, Lord, am I ready to do what it is I'm interested in doing? Now, on the other side of the coin, let me tell you, a lot of times when you're getting ready to do it, God changes a lot of things in your life. My wife is sitting here, and my wife would be the first one to tell you that I probably changed more in the first year that I went to the counseling center up in Philadelphia and was in counselor training than I have in all 32 years she's known me. Because I sat in case after case after case, and I listened to couple after couple after couple and person after person after person talking about things that I knew were problems for me. They just hadn't gotten out of hand. And I listened to the counselor dealing with that problem in that person's life, bringing the scripture to bear in that person's life, working with it again and again and again. And so every Monday when I went to the counseling center, it was like looking in a mirror the whole day. And that's what happens when you do training in biblical counseling. I'm going to tell you up front, you're going to have to see your naked self in a way you never have before. God will challenge your life. Protecting yourself. First of all, your faith. 1 Timothy again, 1:18-19. This command I entrust to you, Timothy, my son, in accordance with the prophecies previously made concerning you, that by them you may fight the good fight, keeping faith and a good conscience, which some have rejected and suffered shipwreck in regard to their faith. And he gives two examples. Fight the good fight, keep the faith, keep a good conscience. What fight is Paul talking about? He's talking about spiritual warfare. Talking about spiritual warfare. When you're dealing with a rebellious teenager, what are you dealing with? You're dealing with spiritual warfare. There are lots of dynamics to it, and there are lots of different names we put on different facets of it, but when you get to the very core, what are you dealing with? You're dealing with spiritual warfare. You know, I have one of my friends who has two boys who are about 3 years old. They're twins. And I sometimes think T stands for twin and T stands for terror, because they're little terrors. And mom gets really exasperated sometimes. What's going on there? Well, yes, you have two little boys here who need to be civilized and culturalized and spiritualized. But you're talking about spiritual warfare. You're talking about two little guys with an Adamic nature that has to be dealt with. And it's a task. And it takes commitment on the part of a parent. And it takes consistency on the part of a parent. It takes consistency on your knees. It takes consistency in self-control. It takes consistency in discipline. And I'll tell you, that's spiritual warfare on several levels, including the one inside you. Keep the faith. Keep the faith. And I would simply say, I think what Paul's talking about is personal perseverance. One of my counselor friends called me Saturday. I talked with him for about an hour. Anytime he hits the case where he gets discouraged, he calls me. I told him, I said, well, call me sometime when you got a good one to tell me about. And he does. But we were on the phone about an hour, particularly with one case. We spent 30 minutes sorting back through it because he was discouraged. His faith was waning in terms of his own giftedness, in terms of what God had given him, in terms of what he knew. But after we had been on the other side of the coin, his fact that he called me was an indication that his faith was really there. But it was weak. It was faltering. And when we spent 30 minutes talking about it and exploring some possibilities and what else he could do and how he could go about it, and we got to the end of it, he said, thanks. I said, I really needed it. I knew all that, but I really needed it. Keep the faith. Personal perseverance. And then a good conscience. A good conscience. And instead of developing that there, I'm going to move down to the next point, your conscience. There are three aspects to that conscience I think is important in counseling. One is to be sensitive, to keep your conscience sensitive. 1 Timothy 4:2, by means of hypocrisy of liars, seared in their own conscience as with a branding iron. It's easy to shade things a little bit here and shade things a little bit there. And when it happens is when I always forget which state I'm in and what it's called on it. Department of Human Services, that's what it's called in Alabama? I haven't got them all straight yet. But all of a sudden, when they become involved in a case, and you got to deal with all the legalities of it, it's a temptation to shade things a little bit so you're not quite as biblical, to back off a little bit. That's just one example. If you've got a case where there's wife abuse involved, on the one side, you'd like to jump in and take the guy apart limb by limb. But on the other side of the coin, you're a little hesitant to get real involved with it because it might have all kinds of ramifications for you. And I had one guy call me one time, and he said, if you tell my wife one more time anything that goes against me, I hadn't really told her anything goes against me. If you tell my wife one more time anything goes against me, I'll shoot you. And knowing him, could have done it. What's your temptation in that situation? Yeah, back off. You're right. We had one up in St. Louis not so long ago, and I found out he had a 9mm under his pillow. And I thought, I've got to stop this baby right now. And by the way, I'm not anti-gun. I like them. But I said to him, I said, listen, I will not see you in counseling anymore unless you take that 9mm over to your pastor tonight when you get home. He moaned and groaned and got agitated. I said, don't get agitated to me. Then I'm trying to protect you, and I'm trying to protect your wife. You're angry, and you could be foolish, and you regret it the rest of your life, and so would everybody else. And we went back and forth several times, and he finally agreed. He'd take it over. I said, listen, I'm going to tell you now, if I don't get a call from your pastor, it means you didn't take it over. And if I don't get a call from him, I'm going to call him. About 10:30, I got a call. Preacher said, I got it. Thanks. Because he was familiar with the fellow. He'd dealt with him before. But your tendency is just to kind of back off and not do anything. If you backed off and didn't do anything and he shot her, what then? Would you have a clear conscience? No way. Well, you need to be sensitive, it needs to be clear, and your conscience needs to be God-derived. Your conscience needs to be God-derived. Don't let your culture dictate your conscience. Let God dictate. Some years ago, I had two women that came to see me in counseling, totally separate from each other, and neither one of them knew each other. Both of them came to me for the same reason. They had problems in their marriage. They both had gone to another Christian counselor. He had told both of them the same thing. He had told them that what they needed to do was have a couple of affairs so they could get loosened up and then they could have better sex with their husbands. And both of them realized this